Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
That's right, it's the professor here, ruining your favorite history myths since 1963. The other night, Lady Buzzkill and I were watching The Big Short. It's a great film if you haven't seen it. It's about the drama leading up to the housing bubble and financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. In one scene, two young financial analysts visit a real estate development in Florida where overextended homebuyers have stopped paying their mortgages, basically. The two analysts are going through a house abandoned by its owners, and they've left their possessions behind as if they were just going out to dinner or something. It's a strange scene, and one of the financial analysts says to the other, "It looks like the Marie Celeste." You've heard about the Marie Celeste Buzzkillers. That tragic story has been told for over 100 years, and the tale gets wilder and wilder every time. Here's the most well-known version. On December 5th, 1872, a vessel was found drifting in the Atlantic Ocean about 1,400 miles west of Portugal. The crew and passengers were gone, but the ship was in near perfect condition with all her lifeboats intact and all the supplies and clothing and provisions for her occupants there. It was as if the people had just evaporated. What happened? Were they killed by pirates? Was there mutiny and murder? Did a giant squid attack the ship and eat them? Well, I'm going to tell you, Buzzkillers. But I'm also going to use the Marie Celeste story to analyze how historical myths and misconceptions start and spread. Okay, let's begin with the name of the ship. It was the Marie Celeste. She was built in Canada in 1861 and originally named the Amazon. She worked as a cargo ship running between North American ports and London and the West Indies. Damaged in a storm in 1867, the Amazon was abandoned and eventually sold to a shipping company in New York. Rechristened the Marie Celeste, it was repaired and rebuilt. The Marie Celeste was given a new captain named Benjamin Briggs and a new crew in late October 1872. She was also given a commission to take a cargo of denatured alcohol to Genoa in Italy. Now, the specific type of cargo is important for later theories and stories that tried to explain the Marie Celeste mystery. Denatured alcohol, also called methylated spirits, is ethanol. That's used as a solvent and as a fuel for alcohol burners and camp stoves and things like that. It's not for human consumption, Buzzkillers. In fact, in the right amounts, it could be poisonous and kill you. With this cargo, the Marie Celeste left New York Harbor and set sail for Genoa on November 7th, 1872. Captain Briggs's wife, Sarah, and his infant daughter were the only passengers, and there were 7 other crew members. 8 days later, another cargo ship, the Die Gratia, left New York for Gibraltar and more or less followed the same route taken by the Marie Celeste. And 2 weeks later, 1,400 miles off the coast of Portugal, it was the Die Gratia that spotted a ship adrift and seemingly unmanned. Drawing alongside, they saw that it was the Marie Celeste and that no one was on deck. Now, despite extensive attempts to hail the Marie Celeste crew by yelling over, shouting over, no one answered. The Die Gratia's captain sent 2 members of his crew over to investigate. They found the ship deserted. It was not, as later legends would claim, in perfect condition. The rigging was in bad shape, lots of it was strewn over the deck, and some of it was hanging over the side. The sails were also in poor condition, although some of them were set, that is, put out to catch the wind. Some of the hatches on the ship were open, and 3.5 feet of seawater was in her hold. In fact, a temporary sounding rod, which was probably used to measure the water in the hold, was found on the main deck. Although the ship's galley was still well-stocked and seemed to be in good condition, the captain's cabin, as well as the crew's quarters, were disheveled. The ship's papers, except for the log, were missing, and the captain's navigational instruments were gone. Also gone was the ship's only lifeboat, which was a small 2-masted yawl. Now, being a 2-masted yawl, it could still be sailed, right? But it was very small, and especially in the big Atlantic Ocean, so it wasn't exactly super safe. Anyway, it appeared to the Die Gratia crew that the Marie Celeste crew and passengers got into the lifeboat and abandoned the Mary Celeste for some unknown reason. The Digratia then proceeded to bring the Mary Celeste into Gibraltar for salvage. We'll get to the salvage hearing in Gibraltar in a few moments. But while we're still here in the middle of the Atlantic, I'd like to give you an early glimpse of some of the myth-making that's made the Mary Celeste story so famous. In 1884, a young British writer named Arthur Conan Doyle anonymously published a fictional story in the Cornhill magazine. Doyle had been a ship's doctor in the early 1880s and drew on his experience to make a dramatic story from the bare bones of the Mary Celeste tale. It was entitled J. Habakkuk Jepson's Statement, and it was based around a fictional character, Dr. Jepson, who was a passenger on the Mary Celeste, as Doyle renamed it, the Mary Celeste, and that's how it's gone down in history, so to speak. Its opening paragraphs describe the Digratia finding an abandoned ship, and those paragraphs are read here by the British voice actor and our new Buzzkill bestie, Leonard Payne.
In the month of December, in the year 1873, the British ship Digratia steered into Gibraltar, having in tow the derelict brigantine Mary Celeste, which had been picked up in latitude 38 degrees 40 minutes, longitude 17 degrees 15 minutes west. There were several circumstances in connection with the condition and appearance of this abandoned vessel, which excited considerable comment at the time, and aroused a curiosity which has never been satisfied. She is perfectly watertight. No signs of a struggle or of violence are to be detected, and there is absolutely nothing to account for the disappearance of the crew. There are several indications that a lady was present on board, a sewing machine being found in the cabin, and some articles of female attire. These probably belong to the captain's wife, who is mentioned in the log as having accompanied her husband. As an instance of the mildness of the weather, it may be remarked that a bobbin of silk was found standing upon the sewing machine, though the least roll of the vessel would have precipitated it to the floor. The boats were intact and slung upon the davits, and the cargo, consisting of tallow and American clocks, was untouched.
Notice the differences here? Now, obviously, Arthur Conan Doyle wrote this as fiction, and we'll explain his version of the solution to the Mary Celeste mystery later. The cargo's different, the ship's lifeboat is still on board, and everything else in the ship seems untouched. As I said before, it's as if the people on board just vanished. And since Arthur Conan Doyle wrote the opening pages of his story so convincingly, the mysterious tale of the Mary Celeste was off and running. Now, let's go back to Gibraltar in December 1872, where the salvage court was looking into what exactly happened to the Mary Celeste. The Gibraltar court tried to establish two things. First, the salvage value of the Mary Celeste, and second, what had happened to its crew and passengers. Now, the two issues were somewhat intertwined. If the Mary Celeste cargo had been extremely valuable, it's possible that another ship could have attacked her, killed the people on board, and brought the ship in and tried to claim a salvage reward. They could have also damaged the Mary Celeste to make it look as if its crew and passengers escaped a sinking ship and were lost at sea. Well, buzzkillers, the hearings in Gibraltar didn't go well. In addition to the testimony from the Digratia captain and crew, the court took evidence from the surveyor of shipping in Gibraltar, who was an official there. Initially, these reports seemed to indicate that the damage done to the ship's bow was man-made and appeared to have been deliberately created to give the impression of sea damage. Further, traces of what looked like blood were found on the captain's sword, and stains found on the ship's rail also looked like blood. The Attorney General in Gibraltar, who was in charge of the case, ultimately in charge of the case, reported that a crime had been committed. Now, he strongly implied that a crew member or crew members got into the alcohol, got drunk, killed the captain and his family in a rage, and then escaped on the ship's yawl. The fact that the denatured alcohol in the hold couldn't be consumed seems to have eluded him. But also, within a couple of weeks, the alleged blood on the sword and on the ship's rail were put under microscopes and shown not to be blood. A more senior and expert naval examiner also showed that the damage to the Mary Celeste bow was caused by the normal action of the ocean in any long Atlantic crossing. So the Gibraltar Salvage Court then had to rule that foul play could not be proved. So they paid a small salvage award to the captain of the Di Gratia, released the Mary Celeste, and she proceeded to Genoa, where her cargo was unloaded. And we'll get to the rest of the story, the famous myth and mystery of the Mary Celeste, when we get back from this message from our advertising department. Okay, Buzzkillers, I'm down here in the advertising department at the Institute. They can't hear me up on the research floor, so I can tell you what really happened on the Mary Celeste. Think about the poor captain. He's there at the wheel, going halfway across the Atlantic. It takes a long time. He's got a lot of time to think, and he's got a lot of time to stew. And you know what starts to get on his nerves? He realizes that he's been paying $4 a blade to the ripoff razor companies for his shaving blades. $4 for too long. He's standing there thinking, for too long, these two or three companies have been dominating the market and I'm getting ripped off and everyone's getting ripped off. They make a small change in their blade. They come out with the newest version. They raise their already high prices. I shouldn't have to pay this anymore. It started to drive him crazy. Gradually, he started opening up to the rest of the crew and the passengers saying, we've got to change this. Let's abandon ship and find an island where we can have Harry's razors drop ship us $2 a blade razors. We won't have to put up with the $4 crap anymore. And so, in his fervor and his anger at the big ripoff razor companies, that's what they did. They wanted Harry's five-blade razors. Why? Because they have a soft flex hinge for more comfortable glide. They have a trimmer blade, which is very important for people in the Navy and the sailors, for those hard-to-reach places, lubricating strip, and textured handle for more control when it's wet. After all, they were at sea. Harry's was perfect for them. And their prices were still just $2 a blade. How did they do that? Well, Harry's did it by owning the factory in Germany where they make the blades. They make the highest quality razors themselves. They sell them online, which the captain knew about and knew he could take advantage of, for half the price of the ripoff razor companies. Now, fortunately for you, and not for the Mary Celeste people, Harry's has a special offer. They'll send you their popular trial set for free when you go to harrys.com. The free trial set comes with a razor, five-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. You just pay a pittance for shipping. Plus, just for you buzzkillers out there, enter the code BUZZKILL at checkout and you'll get their post-shave balm for free. Post-shave balm is fantastic. Lady Buzzkill won't let me out of the house without it. You'll look better and your face will feel better all day when you use it. Your subscription plan, of course, is customizable in terms of shipping frequency, no matter where you are, and you can cancel at any time. Go to harrys.com, enter the code BUZZKILL at checkout. You'll get a great razor, blades, and shave cream, and the post-shave balm for free. You'll have a whole new and better world of more affordable shaves, buzzkillers. It won't drive you crazy, and you won't have to abandon ship. Now, back up to the research department. Okay, we're back. And of course, the Mary Celeste being released from the salvage court and going off to Genoa would have been the end of the story. Except that enough loose ends and weird unknowns had been left by the Gibraltar court and were recorded in its reports to the British Admiralty that people continued to wonder what happened. And they continued to wonder what happened over decades. Here's the short version of the most popular explanations. One. Fumes rising from the alcohol drove everyone on the ship crazy, and they all jumped overboard and drowned, or got into the lifeboat to escape the fumes, and they were lost at sea. Another one is the captain went into a crazy religious frenzy and killed everyone. A third is that the Mary Celeste captain and the Di Gratia's captain had a secret arrangement, an agreement to split the salvage award after the ship was abandoned. And the Mary Celeste folks were waiting on an island in the Azores for the Di Gratia's captain to come back and give them their share of the loot. The fourth biggie is that pirates from Morocco raided the Mary Celeste and killed everybody. There were at least two natural phenomena that might have explained it. A waterspout swamped the ship and the crew and the passengers escaped via the lifeboat, and then of course they were drowned later on. An undersea earthquake could have done the same thing, And finally, my favorite, a giant squid attacked the ship. Now, while this is possible, Buzzkillers, it's unlikely that a squid, and there are giant squids out there, would have picked off just the people without leaving evident damage. Now, we don't have enough time to debunk these all in detail, but they all suffer from the same problem that we talk about again and again in this show. No evidence, Buzzkillers. What we want to do here is to show how invented stories about the ship's disappearance have built on the unexplained aspects of the mystery and the open-ended conclusions of the salvage court. They use these conclusions as if they were a rock-solid base on which to start their detective work. And the Mary Celeste mystery mania follows the patterns of what researchers here at the Institute call myth by expansion. You remember last year, we showed you how history myths and misconceptions can start and spread in a different, a sort of kind of opposite way than myth by expansion I just mentioned. It's very similar to the way rumors and urban legends are created. Sociologists, anthropologists, and other experts in the field refer to this process as the abandonment of qualifiers. You remember how we explained it. It's like that elementary school game, telephone. Here's an example. I happen to mention to Lady Buzzkill that I'm working on the Mary Celeste. I say something like, one of the theories is that a giant squid attacked the ship and killed everyone. Now, although giant squids have attacked ships, it's very rare, but it could have happened. And that's what I say. The servants overhear us talking. One of them relates this story to one of her girlfriends who works at another great house later that night. But she drops the part where I say squid attacks are very rare. The professor, she says, thinks that the Mary Celeste could have been attacked by a giant squid. Now, the lady of that house overhears her servants talking about this. She then relates the story at a bridge party, but leaves out the could have been part. This is the abandonment of qualifiers process. She says, the professor has found out that the Mary Celeste was attacked by a giant squid. And so on and so on. The story flows and spreads until it appears in the society pages that Professor Buzzkill, with all his massive credibility, has solved the Mary Celeste mystery. It was a giant squid. That's the reduction of qualifiers process in history myth-making. And many of the Mary Celeste stories have worked that way. History myths, however, are also made through the opposite process, and that is expansion. This is especially true here because so many elements of the story, the Mary Celeste legend, come from journalism and fiction, including stage plays and movies. And both of these get a lot more attention than historical analysis done by people like yours truly and the researchers here at the Institute. Here's a quick rundown of the spread of the Mary Celeste story through the popular media. In 1883, the Los Angeles Times published a Mary Celeste story. As far as we can tell, they were the first to come up with the ship was in perfect condition myth. Here's a quote. Every sail was set. The tiller was lashed fast. Not a rope was out of place, they wrote. The fire was burning in the galley. The dinner was standing untasted and scarcely cold. The log was written up to the hour of her discovery. So this is June 9th, 1883. And in 1884, Arthur Conan Doyle published his story that we mentioned earlier in the show and also talked about the ship's perfect condition. The giant squid story first appeared in Chambers Journal in September 1904. And a fictional story from a survivor of the Mary Celeste was published in the Strand magazine, telling of shark attacks and other drownings after the people left the ship for some unknown reason. Another survivor story was printed in the Daily Express in 1924, in which the theory of a criminal collusion between the two captains, that's the Mary Celeste captain and the Di Gratia captain, was fleshed out. And the other explanations I mentioned before showed up in newspapers, histories, novels, plays, and radio programs throughout the 20s and the 30s. And especially in 1935, the major British film company, Hammer Film Productions, released a dramatic version of the story entitled The Mystery of the Mary Celeste. In the U.S., when it was released, it was called The Phantom Ship. It tells the story of a mad crewman who murders the people on the ship one by one and then jumps overboard and drowns. The crazy crewman was played by none other than Bela Lugosi. a major star. Now, The Mystery of the Mary Celeste, the Phantom Ship, it's a terrible movie, Buzzkillers. It's just terrible. But it was very popular. And a popular movie with a major star only fuels the engine of the historical myth-making machine. You see how things are expanding here. It's getting further and further out and further into different media. By the end of the 1930s, therefore, the Mary Celeste story didn't just have a life of its own. It had many lives of its own because of all the different crazy theories, and they just expanded and expanded. Now, well into the 21st century, even reputable folks like the Smithsonian Channel were releasing documentaries that rummaged through the various theories as if they were all based on equally valid evidence. The same supernatural phenomenon that were used to explain the Bermuda Triangle were applied to the Mary Celeste. And now we even have something called Mary Celeste Syndrome in nature. Its scientific name, the name that scientists use, is called colony collapse disorder. It's when worker bees desert a hive completely, but leave the queen behind, as well as plenty of food and a couple of nurse bees to care for the queen. Otherwise, the hive is untouched. Blows your mind, doesn't it, Buzzkillers? Mary Celeste Syndrome. Now, I want to finish by going back to the piece most responsible for the popularity of the Mary Celeste mystery, Arthur Conan Doyle's 1884 fictional J. Habakkuk Jephson's statement. It's a pretty good story, and in it we can recognize the seeds of Doyle's later work with a certain detective, you know, we like to refer to as Sherlock Holmes. Jephson, a doctor with the Union Army during the American Civil War, had received a strange but precious black stone from a slave who'd helped him nurse back to health after he was wounded at the Battle of Antietam. Now, Jephson later books a passage on the Mary Celeste to Lisbon. As the ship nears Europe, one of the passengers kills the captain and convinces the crew to take the ship to West Africa. There they meet up with a band of pirates who murder the rest of the crew. Jephson is spared because the African pirates find the precious stone in his pocket. Now, it turns out that the strange black stone was the missing part of a venerated religious statue in West Africa, and the pirates are distracted by it. It's beautiful and it works perfectly, and it's almost as if their entire belief in the statue is confirmed. Jephson is able to escape and eventually get back to the United States. Doyle's story was so popular that the U.S. consul in Gibraltar actually made inquiries into whether parts of the story were based in fact, and whether there were crimes involved that needed to be investigated. Is it any wonder that if a U.S. government official was sufficiently taken in by Doyle's skill as a storyteller to believe at least part of the tale, that so many other people believed it too? Doyle tried to put a lid on the speculation, and here again is our Buzzkill bestie, Leonard Payne, to voice what Doyle wrote.
In the absence of a clue or grain of evidence, it is to be feared that the fate of the crew of the Mary Celeste will be added to those numerous mysteries of the deep, which will never be solved until the great day when the sea shall give up its dead. If crime has been committed, as is much to be suspected, there is little hope of bringing the perpetrators to justice.
The real explanation at the root of the whole story is that no one knows what happened to the ship. There's no evidence at all to work with. But I guess that's not good enough for our highly active cultural imaginations. And that's how we ended up with the Mary Celeste Myths and Mystery. Talk to you next week. Epicast.